Welcome to A Play on Nerds.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Jarman.
Between us, we have more than 30 years of experience in the nerd arts.
Each week, we endeavor to bring the world of nerddom to all of you.
So push up your glasses and listen up, Internet.
This is A Play on Nerds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to A Play on Nerds. This is episode 25, and we are so excited to have you guys back with us.
25, a milestone, but we're not going to play like it is one.
We're a quarter way to 100.
Exactly.
I will promise right now that 100 will be a special episode.
Yes, we will find something special to do for that.
That's far enough in the future that I won't regret that at all.
In theory.
But no, we got a great show for you this week. We're going to be talking comics, and we have, our third or fourth guest?
Something like that. We're getting four. Up there.
Yeah, because Patrick. Yeah, four guests.
Yep, and his name is Ryan. He's with the Positively Nerdy podcast, and I really like that name because he talked about another podcast I was on. We met on the 10 Forward podcast, but he tries to be a positive force in the nerd commentary community because so much on the internet could be so negative right now. And a thing he brought up, Steve, that I like a lot is that like you listen to Star Trek podcasts or anything else, and they are bashing the show constantly, even though they love Star Trek. Most of the podcasts will be about, oh, this episode was so shitty, I couldn't believe how crappy those special effects were. It's like, well, you love Star Trek, so why are you only just complaining about it? So he talks about nerd things in a positive way, which I think is nice.
Well, good. It sounds like you two will get along, because you're a film optimist.
Yeah, exactly. So. You're the realest pessimist in the situation.
You're like, hey guys. Waterworld wasn't that bad.
I love Waterworld.
Right?
Waterworld's fantastic.
Mind you, that was middle school you, by the way, that I was just doing.
Right,
hell guys?
I don't think I ever sounded that way.
Oh, you couldn't hear yourself.
I've had this voice since I was 3 years old.
Just walked out of the room. Hey, Mom, give me a scotch.
Give me a stogie and a scotch. I'm ready to go. Now I know how to smoke a stogie, so thanks, Steve, for last week.
Excellent. And you know how to drink fine wine.
Yes, fine wine.
And once again, I'd like to apologize to Mr. Raul Julia.
No, I like how you're saying Raul now instead of Raul.
Raul Julia.
Raul's just the character from Phantom of the Opera, so I think Raul is more appropriate.
I want to apologize to that character also.
Why not?
Sure.
So what have you been up to the past week, Steve?
So this past week, work has been hell again. So without saying too specific, I have a company that is coming out with a consumer product that everyone is going to buy. And
be more cryptic about your company.
It goes out tomorrow, and it's going to be nutballs.
If you're the slightest bit of a sleuth, then you'll know who he works for now. But he didn't say it.
I work in Grand Central Terminal. This is the busiest place in the world, and it's going to be nuts tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what my whole week has been pushing toward, is getting ready for that. But my exciting and nerdy news this week I discovered a game for the iPhone. It may exist for Android and other platforms, called QuizUp.
Hmm.
And it is just a simple trivia game. The games take, I would say, a minute and a half to 2 minutes to play, so nothing bad. You get matched up against people.
Very cool.
And they ask you trivia questions, and you can either go random or you can pick categories or custom categories, and I have picked the Muppets and movies. And within 3 days, went from, they've got different levels, sort of like, you know, you level up and then you get titles and stuff. It's goofy.
Yeah.
But within 2 days, went from level 1 to level 20, became, on my first day, the best Muppet trivia player in New York State.
I saw that in your Facebook post.
And on my second day, became top 10 in the nation.
Jeez. People need to get on board in this app and beat you.
Very, very, very proud. They did. So that's the thing. I'm convinced that people have alerts on their phone for when their scores get beaten, because I only had those positions for maybe an hour or two and then was knocked out promptly.
They're like, someone stole my crown.
I'm convinced that I just don't have notifications turned on, so I'm not getting them.
Well, I should join up and do Star Trek on that thing.
You should. All sorts of stuff. Highly recommend it. QuizUp, very fun. Try it out. The nice part of the thing is you can play around while you're waiting for something and then be done with it. And I like any game I can walk away from.
And did you automatically post that to Facebook, or did you like have to take a screenshot or whatever?
I could have, I believe. There's a share button, but I went, nah, I'll just post a picture.
That reminds me of Sporkle, which is a great website online that has tons of little independent quizzes you can take, but they don't actually, you don't go against anyone. You just kind of see how your time compares to the national average.
Yeah, so that was my, that's my exciting nerdy news for the week. I proved that I truly am one of the biggest Muppet nerds in the nation.
And to piggyback on top of what you were saying about your week being crazy, I think it shows the dedication Steve and I have towards this podcast, because we're both incredibly busy this week and we're still making time for it.
I have opened every day this week, so I have been up at 4:45 and out the door at 5:30.
Every day. I've been getting about 2 hours of sleep every night because I've been going back and forth between the voiceover work that I have, which is taking a lot of time, just took over. I'm co-owner now of Skill Focus Burlesque, the nerdy burlesque troupe here in Orlando. So I've been going to a lot of meetings to take that over, and a lot of financial stuff and kind of figuring that all out. It's taking a lot of time. And then I'm taking a stage dialects course at a local community college here just to kind of brush up my dialect skills, which aren't very good at the moment.
So what dialects will you be learning in this course?
For the basic course, we're learning like the RP British accent, and then we've done the Cockney British accent. Then
Could you do a little bit of that Cockney British accent for
us? No, because Steve and I talked before the show how horrible my Cockney is. That's why I'm taking this course, because I can do the refined British accent, but I cannot do the Cockney accent.
Any little chop shoppity governor, and then he went down in the burial.
You wouldn't know it, but that's Steve's Russian accent, actually.
Yeah. Spot on.
Every accent Steve does, it sounds exactly like that, and it's amazing.
Yes.
But then we do Irish and Scottish, and then at the end of the class, we all pick a different language that we want to specialize in or do like on our own.
And what language will you be choosing?
I don't know. I'm still considering maybe Australian or New Zealand, or like maybe South African. Those are all fun accents to do and kind of off the standard.
I would say Australian would probably come in most handy as far as frequently. Acting.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because how many is like, I need someone who can do a New Zealand accent.
Besides it being just fun to do, you're right. That's like what's going to be the most useful. So
yeah, exactly. I also think maybe you should think of maybe Russian or Eastern European somewhere.
Yeah, Russian I have down pretty well,
because you can play dark and swarthy.
Swarthy.
Yeah, you can, because when you grow in your facial hair, you get a little bit of sun. Yeah, you can do it.
How would you define swarthy?
Swarthy is somebody of darker, generally, hair and middle to dark toned skin.
Okay. I think of Russians being pretty pale, actually. I guess it depends. The Russia's huge, so I guess it depends what part of Russia you're from.
Well, then also, like Eastern Europe.
Yeah.
Anywhere like there. Greek, Romania, and Czechoslovakia. Yeah. Greek would be good for you to know.
If I got a tan.
You could play Greek. Like, I think that's what you should really think about.
Yeah, because you could play like Irish, Scottish, German.
Yeah, because I got the light hair, but yeah. I couldn't.
You could even pull off like the Scandinavian countries, because you're also very tall as well.
True, but I don't look Russian or anything else, and I'm too pale to be ever, even if I tan, it would just be ridiculous.
Oh, maybe I'll really throw the teacher off and try to get an Icelandic accent, like Bjork. I want to learn Bjork's accent, please.
I am
Bjork. I like to sing songs, please.
You should learn the Canadian accent.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Oh. Actually, I'm hoping to get on the podcast later on. I need to start listening to their podcast and actually download it for the first time. Yeah, they're from the Rusted Robot podcast. And we mentioned them before, and then they mentioned us on their podcast.
Oh, they every episode's about robots, right?
Well, yeah, but actually, they've kind of expanded past that, because there's only so much you can talk about with robots, but they always kind of veer in the direction of robots when they can, or androids, okay. That kind of thing. But they have wonderful Canadian accents with the Aboot and Suri and that kind of thing. But they're a lot of fun. So I'm back on the podcast later on. Maybe do a robot-centered episode. That'd be kind of fun. So
yeah.
We'll check it later.
That'd be cool. Yeah. Bring it on, Rusted Robot.
The Rusted Robot Podcast.
It's time for Nerdy News.
So, got any nerdy news for us this week, Steve?
I do, and I have titled, as I title all of my stories, this one is called Fogbeak.
Fogbeak?
Fogbeak!
Sounds like a character from, like, Fraggle Rock or something.
Hey, kids, I'm Fogbeak! I'm here to entertain you!
Yes, it's a Muppet. Exactly.
So, for the first time in history, people have, for a long time, people have tried to gather condensation in the desert and tried to make that a source of water. But it's insane because even with a lot of huge contraptions, the yield is very, very small, or you have to use compressors, which take up fuel, so it doesn't make sense. And these two guys were like, hey, there's got to be an easier way. So what they did is they looked at the beaks of shorebirds and how they were naturally designed, because they pull water out of earth, out of the dirt, and pull in food with it. And so, like, how is this beak designed that it traps all that water? And so they basically made a glass replica out in the desert, and a 10 inch by 6 inch model collected a teaspoon of water in 36 minutes and basically double that in an hour, which is doesn't sound like much, but consider the model is small, it is one unit. And this is something like 500% more, 400 to 900 times more water than any other method that, that has been attempted.
Wow. And if you think if they left that overnight, that's enough for like a small family, maybe.
Exactly. Or if you had enough of them.
Yeah.
Or if, you, yeah, and you took this and instead of 10 inches by 4 inches, you took it and blew it up to 10 feet by 4 feet. You know.
I have a giant beak sitting in the desert.
And so this could really, this could be the a reasonably cheap answer for desert dwellers, both in the U.S. And all over the place.
Oh, so yeah.
It's exciting.
That's pretty cool. What does it look like? Does it look like a giant beak sitting in the desert?
That's the worst part. So I've read this story, and they don't have a picture anywhere.
Oh. I don't read things unless they have pictures.
I know. I know. Books are hard.
I love books.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
I also love Lamp. So.
Oh, I'm reading. I Anna and I have started watching, and I have started reading Game of Thrones.
Oh, very nice. Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, and so we're in mid-season three, and I just am like couple, like 10, 15, 10, 12 chapters into the first book.
Nice. How so far is it pretty cool, meshed pretty well with the show?
So far, it's almost identical.
Nice.
It must verge off at some point soon, because everybody talks about it, but I haven't hit that point yet. So far, it's pretty much exactly what the show was.
Most of what I've heard is just they mix characters together that are kind of superfluous, and like they kind of, they'll have to pull some stories earlier from further books to make it happen sooner, just to make it make sense in the TV show format, so that doesn't sound that bad to me.
Well, that's probably coming later, but as of right now, it's almost exactly the same.
Nice. I want to read them eventually, but I'm stuck on Wheel of Time right now, so it'll take me a while.
Fair enough. Yeah, I had to take a break from Stephen King's It.
Oh, nice.
I'm like 3,000 pages into that 13,000-page book and went, no, I'm good.
I heard they're remaking that for no reason whatsoever.
Oh, good. I hope Tim Curry's still available.
Yes. I hope he plays it as Frankenfurter from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
I'm just a sweet transvestite. From transsexual Transylvania.
See, I hope he plays it as the Mater D from Home Alone 2.
See, I hope he plays it as the devil from that movie with Tom Cruise.
Legend.
Legend, thank you.
Tom Cruise spends the whole movie shitting glitter. It's just everywhere. He still has glitter in his hair from that movie, people.
When he shits glitter, that's when he's getting rid of the thetans in his body to be a higher level Scientologist. Yeah.
That's right. Thetan. That's not real.
It's a fake thing.
I mean, can we both agree that that's not real?
Yeah, I think we can.
Of all the things you try to defend, can we both agree that that shit is just made up?
I think that's pretty safe.
All right, that's okay. That's our first official stance on anything at a play on nerds that we're both behind. Scientology is bullshit and it's not real.
There you go. At Dragon Con, we're walking through like the merchandise tables. Like, there's giant rooms full of the merchandise table. It's overcrowded and people are walking through. And we get to this one corner. And we're like, oh, no one's here. I wonder what's for sale at this table that no one wants to look at it. And the Scientologist had a table full of L. Ron Hubbard books. And there was nobody there.
That's the thing. I bet you if someone hadn't based a dumbass religion off of it, those would probably be pretty good books.
Yeah, because the story they have about this like giant like demon overlord alien who like somehow dismisses the souls of hundreds of millions of aliens into this volcano in Earth. Like, that sounds interesting for a sci-fi story.
Yeah.
But it's not real. So I had a nerdy story. It's a little less scientifically based than yours, as usual. But they're at Disney World, where Steve and I spent most of our childhood growing up in Orlando. So
much friggin' time there.
Yeah, I know. And we went to Epcot a bunch. And this is actually an Epcot story. I'm completely ripping this off because I just listened to Ryan, our guest who's coming on the show later. I listened to his little short podcast about Epcot and how they're getting rid of the ride, Maelstrom, from the Norway section of Epcot. And for any of you out there who have not been to Epcot before, it's been around since, like, I think 1980 or something, maybe earlier.
And it's a lame, like, Flume log ride, right?
Well, no, that's the thing is that Epcot in general, as a kid, I always thought was the educational part of Disney parks.
It definitely was.
And it was basically, there's all these different sections of the world, different countries you can go to, and some of them have rides, some of them don't. They just have different themed restaurants for that country. And, you know, it's kind of neat, but I was always so bored as a kid. But the one ride I was always excited about was the Maelstrom ride in Norway, because it was kind of more of an intense ride, but it also had like the scary trolls in it occasionally. And I was like, I always look forward to going there on school trips and stuff, because everything else was just boring and educational.
Hey, there was also Body Wars.
Yeah, that was true. That was like the one like 3D kind of Back to the Future ride.
Yeah, that was the only other good one, though. You're absolutely right.
Since then, now Epcot has like, you know, the space ride and they have a roller coaster. But back when we were little kids, they did not have that stuff.
Yeah, no.
So they're replacing Maelstrom with a Frozen ride. Which I wasn't really aware of this till listening to his podcast, but apparently Frozen did take place in Norway. I just didn't notice that when I was watching the movie, but apparently it's based in Norway.
There was so much culture.
Yeah. Snowmen that walk around, but no, I didn't mind Frozen, but yeah, it's gonna be interesting. But it's just sad because part of my childhood that the only thing I liked about Epcot was that ride, and now it's gonna be gone. Starting October 5th, actually.
My favorite part of Epcot was whatever the ride is that's inside of the ball.
Okay,
that shows you what the future's gonna be like.
Tomorrowland.
The reasons why a it's like 7 or 8 minutes where you just get to sit and be in air conditioning.
Yes. And it's real slow. It's like slowly moves. Yeah.
And the second reason is because it's just so funny to watch what in the 70s they thought the future was.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Because they take you through past like from caveman times up to the present. And then present was like 1950. And then the future was like 1970. In 1990, we'll have things that cook your meals in 20 seconds.
What was that? That it was like a Ferris wheel of tomorrow or something, and there was an awful animatronic guy that sung you a song, and the audience rotated around this animatronic thing in the middle.
Possibly.
You have any idea what I'm...
At one point, you go up into space. That's like the coolest part. Is like you go into this panorama of space, like you're like floating in the middle of the air. It's kind of neat.
No, this is a totally different thing.
Oh, different ride?
Yeah, I'm going to find it.
I mean, there's a Small World. Is that in Disney or is that in Epcot?
The Carousel of Progress.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a different one. That's true.
Yeah, that one you literally just, it's like a 20-minute show where you just get to sit in the air conditioning and you slowly move around this platform. It's great.
Often we would call them make-out rides because you could sit there with your person and make out.
I made out with so many girls on the Haunted Mansion ride.
Oh, yes.
Holy crap. A lot of dates.
The Haunted Mansion.
A lot of dates at Disney World and a lot of smooches at Disney World. That's all I'm saying.
It's a great date place to go.
It is.
Theme parks in general. Yeah.
I went on a ton of dates there. Dear Lord.
And we have Halloween Horror Nights coming up here at Orlando Universal. Ooh. It's I don't handle those very well. I'm not very good at going through haunted houses.
No, you don't.
I went last year with my girlfriend and I was... She played the stereotypical man. I played the stereotypical woman. I was like, I'm getting better at it.
Well, good nerd news. So now, ladies and gentlemen, I bring back a feature that we have not done in a long time because I had to let the sort of list refresh, so to speak. And that is Brooklyn Band or Smut Search.
And Steve, please explain to our audience if they have not heard this segment before.
It's been such a long time since we've done it. So there is a porn website named pornnd.com. Don't ask how I know that. And this website features a very interesting list, and that is a live search list, which shows you scrolling text of all of the terms that people are looking for in a pornography site. Some of them are very much what you would expect, but some of them are strange. And upon looking at them long enough, I realized some of them could easily be the names of Brooklyn bands. So what I have compiled is a list of 10 Brooklyn bands and smut search terms, and Jarman is going to have to tell me which one is a actual Brooklyn band and which one is a porn search.
Absolutely.
It's very exciting.
And very disturbing, often very disturbing.
Often. All right. Are you ready to play Brooklyn Band or Smut Search?
Let's do this.
All right. Fur boots.
I'm going to go with Smut Search.
That is absolutely correct.
Nice.
All right. Cattle press.
Cattle press. You know, I'm going to go with Smut Search.
That is a Brooklyn band.
Oh, damn.
All right.
I was picturing some weird things in my head.
I know you were.
I had to.
Fiasco.
Fiasco?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that could be referring to in sex, so I'm going to go ahead and still say Smut Search.
It is a Brooklyn band.
Fuck.
I feel like you're fighting your instincts. You got to let the Zen flow through you.
The Smut Zen flow through
Smutty
you.
Zen.
Smut Zen.
All right. Slime.
Oh, God. Go with Smut Search.
That is a Smut Search.
Basically, like right now, I'm on a test and I'm putting C for all the answers.
Yes, you are. All right. Smoking Kiss.
Damn. I'm going to go with indie band.
That is a Smut Search.
Damn it. Every time.
All right.
It's one or the other.
Plush Gun.
Indie band.
That is an indie band. It's a Brooklyn
yes.
band.
Good. I'm glad all to right. hear it.
Pulsating.
I feel like it's obvious, but then you'd know I'd think it was obvious, so I would say the other thing, so that I wouldn't say it was Smut Search.
Then I would know that you would think that I would think that was obvious, and then I would reverse it again to fuck with you.
But what you don't know is I've been conditioning myself against that poison for years.
All that time it was Shortcut that was poisoned.
They were both poisoned. I spent the last few years building up an immunity to Iocane powder.
Iocane powder.
I'm going to go with Smut Search.
That's a Smut Search.
Yeah, all right.
All right. Warm Ghost.
That has to be an indie band.
That is a bindy band.
Good. You said a bindy band.
All right. Dap.
Dap.
I'll say it again for you. Dap.
Maybe someone was searching for the sound effect they wanted to hear in their porn video, so I'm going to go with Smut Search.
That is a Smut Search.
Yes. Okay.
All right, now the final one. Are you ready?
I think.
All right. G-Queen.
G-Queen.
Yes. G followed by the word queen.
I'm going to go with Smut Search.
That is a Smut Search.
Woohoo!
You got better as you went on.
That's true.
All right, let me tally up the points. 1, 2, 3, 4,
drum
5,
roll.
6. 7. You got 7 out of 10.
That's probably the best I've done.
Yeah, you got it. You got the last 5 right, I think.
Damn.
Yeah, good work. Woo-hoo-hoo. Well, good job. You are getting better at this.
Oh God, that's so sad.
What a skill to have. Hey, it's my theory that we all have superpowers. It's just most of our superpowers are shitty.
Yeah, like I have 2 extra vertebrae in my back.
Yeah, and my hands are always warm.
Neither of these things are helpful, and actually they're quite detrimental to our lives.
Yeah, unless I'm like thawing raw burger, like frozen hamburger or something, that's it, that's all I got.
And mine just gives me back pain, so that's great.
Yeah, that's a power. It's shitty, but it's a power.
What a good transition.
Speaking of powers, ladies and gentlemen.
So for our special 25th episode.
Now it's a special episode.
Now it's special, yes. We have a special guest, Ryan Porter of the Positively Nerdy Podcast, all-around great guy. Met him on 10 Forward Podcast, the wonderful Star Trek podcast I talk about all the time. And welcome, Ryan. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you are officially our 4th guest, and that's so exciting.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What do I get?
You get...
We'll send you virtual candy.
You get our company for the next 15 to 25 minutes.
I'll take it.
Yeah, sold.
Take what you can get.
I'll take the interactive aspect instead of just sitting and listening and yelling sometimes at the speakers.
Oh, good. Yeah, we always wonder, that's why we're having, partially why we have Ryan on, because Steve and I are so woefully ignorant about comics.
Oh my lord, are we?
And we've had X-Men episodes where we talk about the characters and we just know very little about their backstories and pretend like we do. So we're very happy to have you here because you started off, before the podcast began, you did something as far as like you wrote for a blog or for a magazine online. What was that all about?
I did written reviews for a website. And
right.
Yeah, eventually I started podcasting for them toward the end, and then I decided that I needed my own creative space, let's say. And so I left and started my own thing, and I've been doing that for almost 3 years.
Wow.
So.
Very
you
cool.
Have like 300 episodes now or something?
224 just got recorded.
Jeez. So. We have that to look forward
have
to.
Have you already promised that your 300th episode will be a special one?
Well, I actually meant to do this grand thing for my 200th, and then the way it worked out, it ended up being a convention recap, but I didn't want to try to squeeze something else in the way, so I was like, 200th episode is just the next episode, so
okay.
I don't try to plan that far ahead.
We make all sorts of outrageous promises, it's great.
And then don't keep them, of course.
You should try it sometime.
But, so, I want to ask, like, how... Because for some reason in my childhood, I just missed out on really getting into comics, and I wish I would have, because it seems like it would have been so great to start that early. When and how did you get started in comics and being into them?
Well, I have my dad to thank for that. My dad read comics, so that's pretty much it. I read that's comics awesome. Because my dad read comics, and he stopped when I was, mid-90s, so I was probably in 6th or 7th grade when he stopped collecting, but I had amassed a pretty good collection myself at that point, and he was always willing to let me look at his, and, I mean, as a kid, obviously, you don't actually read them, but looking at the pictures was always fun, and the little comics that came with the He-Man figures, the Masters Universe, when I was a kid, I loved those because the comic came with the character, so that character was in the comics, so I had enough of the toys and figures and vehicles that I could act out the comics with my toys. So that's awesome. That's kind of where that started, and then I became obsessed with Spider-Man, and that has never gone away. He's still my favorite character. And, of course, in the early 90s, it was all about X-Men, the Claremont Jim Lee stuff, and... got really into all the events, Death of Superman and the Nightfall when Bane broke Batman's back and the Clone Saga, and I ate all that. People laugh at it now, but man, that was when I really got into comics, so that stuff really has a special place in my heart. So
people laugh about it, but I have no idea what any of that is.
I know what a lot of that is, but I don't recognize the Clone Saga. Which one's that?
The Clone Saga is a clone of Peter Parker shows up. It's from a very, very old issue of Amazing Spider-Man when a bad guy named the Jackal cloned Peter Parker, and they thought the clone died. And then many, many, many years later, the clone comes back, and then it's revealed that the clone, the one who they thought died and went away, was the actual Peter Parker, and it was this whole big rigmarole, and yeah, we don't really have time to get into all that.
Well, my question is, that's the problem that I encounter trying to get into comics is, yeah, there's lots of reboots where I could jump on and then start with like the new 52s, like in DC, but like how... Because, like, if they bring back that reference from years earlier, and maybe you were never reading it, how do you understand what the heck's going on? Because it's not like they say previously on Spider-Man. You know, like, they don't do that kind of thing. So how do you get into it and know what's happening and understand it?
Well, as a Marvel guy, actually, they are really good about previously on. The first page is usually a recap.
Oh, wow.
And it'll tell you the broad strokes of who Spider-Man is. It'll tell you what happened recently. And it kind of leads you right into... wherever that episode is picking up. So Marvel's really good about that.
That just proves how few comics Jarman has read.
Yeah. No, it's weird because I've just started, because I wanted to pick one character, and I think I've told you this, Steve, but I wanted to pick one character and kind of get into it. So before the Deadpool thing really started becoming crazy at conventions where everyone addresses as Deadpool, I had heard a little bit about him before the craziness, like, oh, he breaks the fourth wall, he's really, crazy. So I wanted to start with that character. So I went and obtained all of the comics of Deadpool from the beginning. I think it starts off with X-Factor comics is where it begins with him. And I just want to start from the beginning and read all of his comics. But they didn't have it, I don't think, back in the day. Because a lot of the 80s ones I'm finding, or I guess it was late 80s, early 90s, they didn't have those catch-up things at the beginning of the panel. So when did that start?
Within the last, 5-ish years or so.
Okay, that's really smart. That is a really good idea.
Yeah, and it's pretty much the polar opposite. DC, I've long maintained, does not care about new readers at all. They are very unforgiving toward new readers. Trade paperbacks, like you would buy like a Barnes & Noble, those are really great access points for new readers. And DC's, I mean, it takes them almost a year for a comic that's out now to have the trade paperback come out. And Marvel, as soon as that story arc wraps up, you can count on a trade. So you can pretty much stay up to date with Marvel and Image and most publishers, but DC, for some reason, takes their sweet time with trades because I think they hate new readers, but that's just my theory. So.
And the trade paperback is like the collection of a bunch
it's of... It's a collection of like 5 to 6 issues, yeah, and or you know classic stories, but they also... Everything's kind of crafted now for the trade because that's more money, so...
Gotcha. Like, I have the Kingdom Come, I guess what you call trade paperback. I didn't know what it was called, but I have that one over sitting over there. I haven't read it yet, but I hope to.
Ryan, do you remember what your first comic was?
Ooh,
no. Usually when I get asked that question, they're not my first, but my first trip to an actual comic book store. I remember the first time my dad took me with him to the comic book store, and I bought 4 issues. I bought Spectacular Spider-Man number 180, Captain America number 310, Iron Man, I think it's 189, I always forget, no, 289, something like that.
That's a good memory.
And Batman, I think 423, I think that was it.
I don't even remember what I had for lunch. That is insane.
I always kept those, they're integrated into my collection, but for a long time I kept those 4 comics separate from everything else and just kind of
that makes sense.
Treasured
okay.
them. And then I have a few, my uncle, when I was young, got me Batman Year One, the trade paperback of that, back when trade paperbacks were much more rare than they are now, and then a collection of the first X-Men comics to feature, after they expanded the roster with Wolverine, Colossus, Nightcrawler and stuff, I still have my very dog-eared copy of that I used to read over and over and over again. So those are usually what I call my first, even though I've been reading and / looking at pictures long before that. So
does your interest expand into graphic novels?
It does. I am unabashedly in love with superheroes, but I definitely go beyond that. And certainly since I started reviewing and people expect you to do more than Spider-Man every month, that certainly helped kind of expand my horizons and look beyond just the superhero stuff.
Okay.
But I will never apologize for liking the superhero stuff. There's almost a stigma now against superheroes. Like, it's cool to hate the big two, being Marvel and DC, and superheroes in general. But that's why we're all here. I mean, I understand if that's not what your preference is, but you can't knock what got us to where we are and why the medium is so popular.
Yeah, I guess like the really gritty, realistic, modern time graphic novels are supposed to be like the cool stuff to be into.
Yes, but it's not cool to read Spider-Man and Batman. It's cool to read, I don't know, I can't think of any current examples, but I guess like Scalped,
like
maybe.
Sandman or something.
Sandman would be one, Transmetropolitan, Preacher, those are kind of maybe a little dated, but I don't know currently what the snobby pick would be, but probably Saga, but Saga kicks ass, so...
You got another question, Steve?
I mean, I've got a list of questions, so we can do whatever.
Okay. I guess, like, maybe if someone tomorrow had never read comics before, but say they're, you know, pretty nerdy, they like Doctor Who, they like Star Trek, they like going to conventions, someone like me, basically, is what I'm putting out there. What would be a good starting point for Marvel comics if they wanted to jump in right now and you were trying to entice them and keep them reading? So you want to give them one that's pretty accessible from the start.
Ugh. Oh, wow.
Putting you on the spot here.
It is putting me on the spot because I actually recently ditched a lot of Marvel comics. And a lot of Marvel comics are also in that kind of in the middle, the eye of the storm, so to speak, in terms of storyline. So like a good, like you think, because I get so particular. You're thinking like a mainstream casual person wants like a mainstream Marvel book to be reading.
Yeah, like a guy who works at a Gap, you know.
Yeah. Really white bread, boring
person.
He wears
turtlenecks. Maybe he wants to read a comic. Who knows?
That's just the strangest thing you could have pulled out of your ass. But anyways.
Again, they're kind of, like I mentioned, they're right in the middle of a big story arc, but the X-Men comics are as good as they've been in a very, very long time from Marvel. Spider-Man... Peter Parker just came back. He was brain swapped with Doc Ock for a while.
I heard about that.
Which I was a big fan of. I thought it was a great change of pace and really cool to see Spider-Man, not just, or Doc Ock, not just, you know, stay alive and assume the role of a hero, but literally actually try to take on the mantle of a hero. He really tried to be the good guy, and to watch him struggle with that I thought was awesome. And to watch Peter Parker come back and have to deal with everything that Doc Ock effed up is awesome. And that's only, like, they're only like 6 issues into Peter coming back. So that's a pretty good one to get caught up in a hurry. And plus, I always love recommending Spider-Man. They just kind of did a soft reboot on Fantastic Four, and it's by James Robinson, who wrote Starman, which might not mean a lot for you guys being news when it comes to comics, but it was a legendary run with a great writer, great character, and he's coming to Marvel for the first time, and he's clearly having a blast writing one of Marvel's longest running, most successful comics, and incorporating a lot of their history without bogging new readers down, and really kind of
a movie named Starman with like Jeff Bridges.
Yes, there was.
Yep. Okay, that's a completely different character.
That would not
I'm sure.
be the same thing.
Yeah, I'm sure that is unrelated.
Not at all.
Nice try, Jarvan.
I tried.
But the big thing from Marvel right now that I'm pushing on people is actually called Ms. Marvel. It's a Pakistani-American teenage girl who gets powers literally overnight. And kind of her life and her deciding to be... She was kind of a nerdy girl. She wrote Avengers fanfic where she was always part of it, which to me, if you insert yourself into fan fiction, that's like the pinnacle of pathetic fan fiction. But it's kind of made her a little bit endearing. And then she gets these powers and she's already had a team up with Wolverine, and she's got a real Spider-Man thing going on where the personal life is at least as important as the superhero life. And all of these like bigwig superheroes are kind of keeping an eye on her, but letting her do her own thing. So there's a lot of behind the scenes, like, building and development that they're doing with that series while letting this awesome, extremely lovable character kind of come into her own. And it's one of the cheapest books that Marvel's publishing, and it's one of the best books that Marvel's publishing, and not nearly enough people are reading.
That sounds very accessible, actually, and kind of like makes you feel like you're the character because you're seeing these superheroes from the outside looking in.
Oh yeah, she's a super nerd. She knows who all of the other heroes are, and she tries to emulate them because she's got these kind of along the lines of a Mr. Fantastic type power set. She can morph her body. It's not quite like Mr. Fantastic, but so she can kind of change her appearance and give herself different kinds of powers. So she knows what the heroes are into. Because in a world where superheroes are real, the nerds would obviously idolize superheroes the way some people idolize, athletes or things like that.
Celebrities.
Yeah. So it's a phenomenal book. It's one of the few $2.99 books that Marvel's publishing, and that's a big reason I have to drop a lot of books, is because Marvel, for at least for a month, and I think the backlash made them stop, they were doing a lot of books at $4.99, and I refuse to pay $4.99 for a book that's not at least, double the size. But Ms. Marvel's only $2.99. And most books.
Was she related to the previous Ms. Marvel series?
Only when she first transformed, she subconsciously took the form of the current Captain Marvel.
Yeah, because now the woman who was Ms. Marvel now has become Captain Marvel.
She's taken that mantle. Yeah. So that was kind of where that name came from.
We actually talked about that, I think, 2 weeks ago, because DC has their Captain Marvel. Who's
now called Shazam.
Shazam. They're making a Shazam movie with Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Black Adam, but we don't know who Shazam is. Right?
The problem with calling Shazam Shazam is he needs to say Shazam to turn into Shazam, and now you have a hero that can't even say his own name.
Without turning into
right. Shazam. Well, they tried to get around it. Like, you have to say it and mean it. Like, there was a line of dialogue, and I was just kind of eye-roll-inducing, but yeah.
So they never call him Captain Marvel anymore in the DC comics?
Not in the New 52. New 52, so he's only Shazam. Ever been Shazam. Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I've heard that before, that the DC definitely reboots a lot more than Marvel does. Is that accurate?
It depends on, I guess, what your definition of a reboot is. But yes, I would say that's entirely accurate. That DC's always kind of got the big, like, Crisis on Infinite Earths back in the 80s, Zero Hour in the 90s, and then obviously the New 52 is a big reboot. They kind of rebooted after Infinite Crisis, and they're supposed to have all new histories and things, but then they don't because they're afraid of pissing off the new fans, pissing off the old fans, but they really want new fans, so they don't quite reboot all the way, and then they just end up pissing off everybody. So, yeah.
This seems very confusing.
Yeah, there's a reason there's a website out there that is a ticking clock that resets every time DC does something stupid. So, the name of it escapes me at the moment, but it never takes very long for it to get reset.
Are there any characters that you feel like everyone else loves and you think are lame?
Well, you mentioned Deadpool before, and I was hoping you wouldn't ask me too much about him because I've never understood the obsession with Deadpool.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't realize it until afterwards that it's become this big, crazy thing. I'm like, well, now I don't really want to read it anymore because everyone else likes it so much.
It was one of those things, like, it wasn't, like, once he got popular, like, it wasn't the my band got popular, now I hate him kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I never got into the character. I never understood his appeal. Once in a while, depending on the writer or the situation, or if he pops up for, like, a cameo appearance, that's great. But I can't read a Deadpool issue. And he would probably be the biggest and best example. I've always had a hard time getting into Daredevil, like, on his own. Like, if he pops up in Spider-Man, like, he and Spider-Man have a really cool dynamic that I've always liked. I always like my Daredevil in chunks. I've never been able to read, like, a Daredevil series, though. But I don't hate him, but a lot of people love Daredevil, and I'm not quite there with it. But I'm looking forward to the Netflix series, so.
Oh, yeah, me too. But I'm forming a theory with you, Ryan.
Uh-oh.
You only like Spider-Man to wear a red costume and no one else, because you don't like Daredevil or Deadpool, and they both have all red costumes.
I'm trying to think of somebody with a red costume to prove you wrong. Flash is cool. Flash has got a red costume.
There you go. But he's DC, I guess.
He is DC.
But,
so, Ryan, on the flip side of that coin, are there any characters that you absolutely love but nobody else seems to like?
Well, everybody's got, like, their D-lister that they're in love with. on the hero side, I'm a big Cloak and Dagger fan. I don't think you'll find too many people that say they aren't. But I love Cloak and Dagger. I have since I was little. I just thought that their powers, like, the contrast of their powers and how they work together or sometimes don't work together is awesome. On the villain side, I love the villain Constrictor, who unfortunately doesn't get used very often, but he was the bad guy in that first issue of Captain America I mentioned, and I've kind of been obsessed with him ever since, even though he's tragically underused in my opinion. but he was one of the big baddies in a recent series that just ended, actually, called Avengers Undercover. That was a bunch of teenage up-and-coming superheroes pretending to be villains to take down this big organization from the inside, and he was one of the principal baddies of that organization, so I was loving the fact that he was around for even if a little bit.
Does he just constrict? Is that his power? like a boa constrictor?
Well, he's part of the it's more of a snake theme thing. His costume kind of looks like a snake, like with the underbelly and the lines kind of thing. And then he's got adamantium coils that come out of his wrists, and he will constrict and you do stuff with that. So
that's a lot more dangerous, the adamantium coils.
Yes. Yeah, one of the talked about adamantium users, I guess, in the Marvel Universe. So,
so I just want to throw this out there. He was actually on Name That Power, and I now have to strike him off the list.
Constrictor,
because it is obvious that you know who that is.
Oh yeah, love. That's awesome.
That's funny.
All right.
Oh, but I wanted one to mention it's funny that you mentioned Cloak and Dagger because I have Cloak and Dagger number one. I just happen to have that comic.
Oh, okay.
I looked it up online. Apparently, it's not worth anything.
Well, that's not their first appearance. Their first appearance was in Spectacular Spider-Man number 127 or something like
that. It's okay. We can edit out you mumbling that. And just correct it.
He knows everything immediately. No, it's not worth anything because they appeared somewhere else first?
Yeah, they appeared in an issue of Spectacular Spider-Man.
But that makes it so the first episode of their comic isn't worth anything?
No, it's all about the first appearance.
Oh, that's good to know. Because I was like so surprised because it's like in pristine condition. It came from like a my stepfather's previous stepchild. He like got all his comics by accident, so now I have them.
Yeah,
like from the
you
80s.
Have the I'm assuming the 4-part miniseries shortly after they were introduced.
It just says Cloak and Dagger number one. They're both in an alley in the front cover.
Oh, that's their ongoing. Yeah, okay.
I guess it's not worth anything. It sucks. I was all excited. Number one comic. Oh, it should be worth something.
I don't collect comics for their value though, so I can't help you with that really.
Even though you don't, do you have any cool rare comics?
Oh, I sure do. I have my big one. Well, my couple big ones. I have Incredible Hulk number 181, which is the first appearance of Wolverine.
Ooh.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And Amazing Spider-Man 127, The Death of Gwen Stacy. Those are my two heavy hitters.
Yeah.
But I have, with very few exceptions, there's a little bit of a gap I'm still working on between when my dad stopped collecting and when I started collecting with Amazing Spider-Man. But I have every single issue from 64 to present.
Wow.
So there's a lot of first appearances and special issues and things in that. So
It's weird because it's like you're not really like a collector since you're not saving them for money value because you're reading them and using them, so they're kind of losing value that way. So you're more like developing your own personal library, basically.
Ooh, I like that. That sounds way better than just collecting, yeah. I guess. So
I feel like collectors are doing it for the money. That's what it feels like when you use that term. I don't know.
I did get the Incredible Hulk issue graded and sealed up and stuff. And I did that mostly just because I have it reprinted and trade and things like that. And I'm not, you know, just preserve it more than,
yeah, might as well.
than value it. But it's expensive to do that, so I don't really care.
Do it for your son's future.
There you go. That is his college fund right there.
Yeah, a lot of people thought that, and the bottom has dropped out of that a long time ago. So.
Oh, damn.
I don't think I'm going to be that guy. But as soon as I die, the wife and child can do whatever they want with them. So.
There you go.
But hopefully I'll raise a good little nerd, and he'll want to hold on to them as well. Yeah. So.
That's a family heirloom right there.
Yeah. I did get it from my dad, so that makes sense.
Are there any comic series that you've gotten into and then just flat out given up on?
Oh, it happens, I would say, all the time.
Okay.
I mean, it just, you know, a new writer takes over or something like that, and it just falls flat. I've dropped almost all of the DC I've been reading right now. I was a big fan of series like Earth 2 and World's Finest and even Batman, which was great for a while, but then they just made it the center of like all these different events in the DC universe, and you had to read all this other crap to keep up, and I'm done. And like just Earth 2 and World's Finest suffered the same thing. I mean, Earth 2 changed its writer. James Robinson, who I mentioned is kicking ass right now in Fantastic Four, started writing it, and then somebody else took over when he jumped ship to Marvel, and I thought, well, I'll just keep going with it. Nope, crap. Wonder Woman, I've been loving that series since it started with the New 52. It's the only book I've read from the New 52 to launching to present, but they're getting a new writer and artist on it, I think October, November, the first issue with the new team hit, so I'll be done then, because everything that made that book special will be done with the current creative team.
Okay.
So it's usually tied into an event, like that's a good jumping off point. I'm always advocating jumping in for people. If, you know, don't worry about the past, they'll either explain it through context or that's what Wikipedia's for, just jump in. But yeah, there's also like events are also sometimes a good jumping off point because I don't care about the larger DC universe. I just wanted to read Wonder Woman. So
yeah, okay. An event.
So yeah, there's always something going on that makes me want to quit and the list is long.
Oh, I have a question actually. I just thought of it. Thinking of Wonder Woman and then women in comics kind of thing. There was a recent kind of fiasco about a Spider-Woman cover.
Oh, there sure was. Yeah.
Do you have any apparently, so for folks out there who don't know, they, I guess, had a comic book cover with Spider-Woman where her ass is up in the air. And actually, the quality of the drawing wasn't very good, which is weird.
I was going to say, that was my biggest thing, was I'm not a huge fan of that artist. And I guess it was the fact that her, like, butt cheeks were kind of separated and everybody's complaining about, like, getting into the realism of it, which, first of all, it's a woman with spider powers. I don't really care about the physics of her spandex. Like, you have other problems if that's what you're worried about. And then, as many other people have illustrated online, there have been plenty of times when Spider-Man was in that exact pose, so the whole sexist thing, including the butt crack separation or the butt cheek separation. So that whole argument doesn't really work. It was really much ado about nothing, in my opinion.
There's much worse out there, I think.
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, I don't know what they're talking about. I think my butt cheeks a little bit in every photo. Is that just me?
just me?
Shit.
Just damn. You, buddy. I think, yeah, the worst problem for that photo was just that it was bad quality drawing.
I didn't think it looked all that great at all. So I would agree with you on that one.
Well, I guess another thing I guess I like to talk about is there's a growing more presence of women in geekdom, and at least if they were already there, probably reading, but now they're being more open with their nerdiness and geekiness because they're more able to without being like ridiculed by horrible geeks who like say girls aren't real geeks and that kind of thing. So I think they're starting to portray women in a more positive light in comics, like with Captain Marvel. She's Captain Marvel. She doesn't have to be Mrs. Marvel or something. She can be Captain Marvel as a woman. So how do you think that's kind of progressing, and how do you think that'll change comics in the future with women in comics?
Well, hopefully, I mean, for the better. I mean, it's still a long road ahead. There's still issues with that kind of stuff. There was another cover recently. Teen Titans just got rebooted with a new numbering, and the cover of that got torn apart by a blogger
Oh, I've seen that one.
Yeah, on just from everything from the body dimensions of the female characters to the perspective of the piece itself and all sorts of stuff. And she received horrible, horrible threats for her opinion, mostly because she was a woman picking apart.
Oh, I did read about that. She's been in comics forever, and like they were saying, "Oh, you don't know comics." It's like, "Yeah, I'm an expert of comics."
She's worked professionally in comics, and yeah, and that was just, I mean, she wasn't wrong at all. I think it was a bit much. Like, I understood where she was coming from, and if she felt that way, that's fine. And I thought it was a bit much, but I didn't think she was wrong. And there were people, including comic professionals, who were really, really awful to her about basically her opinion and about a cover. Like, it was awful, and that kind of stuff happens a lot. And right down to, I mean, there was a story that came out a while ago. I don't want to get into, you know, I don't want to bring the podcast down too much, but the way a female employee was treated by all the male employees at a comic shop, because too many people still see this as like a boys' club, and women are lesser, I guess, for whatever reason. But there's a growing movement within comics. I know, like, companies like IDW are really, like, will slap like a banner on comics that have female creative teams, things like that. I mean, look at a comic like Ms. Marvel that features a strong independent female character. Again, I can't tout Ms. Marvel enough. Writers like Gail Simone, who unfortunately seems to keep getting pigeonholed with having to write female characters. As soon as she leaves one female-centric book, everybody starts clamoring for her to write a different female-centric book. Well, she can write whatever the hell she wants. but so there's still a little bit of that. Even when they embrace a female creative talent, they only want her to do female characters, kind of thing. So that still irks me. But, I mean, Jarman, as a Star Trek fan, you know that sometimes you have to, I mean, women still kind of hide from who they are, if that makes sense. Like DC Fantana, I didn't know for a long time that DC Fantana was a woman. And that was on
Steve doesn't know, but yes, DC Fantana was a writer for the original Star Trek, Steve, and she had to use the name DC Fantana instead of her real name because it sounded like it could be a man.
So people would take her seriously. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That was in the 60s. That makes more sense. But the fact that we're still kind of having glimmers of that now is kind of sad.
Yeah, and sometimes it's hard to get a hold of a female. I've reached out to female talent for interviews and things like that, and I don't want to mention names. I don't want to call anybody out.
Yeah.
But it's very, very hard to get a hold of them because they don't want to deal with the jerks and the mouth breathers and the knuckle draggers. And
yeah, the backlash.
Yeah, so you have to go through a whole rigmarole to be able to talk to these people, which is really too bad. You should be able to access them the same way anything else. But at the same time, I don't blame them one bit because, yeah. So it's... because
the people are out there.
Yeah, it's getting better. And the fake geek girl thing pisses me off to no end. I can't stand that at all.
Because you're married to a geek, right?
I am. I mean, I'm making her more and more of a geek every day. When we first started dating, she had seen the Star Wars movies, but she didn't really care about them. Now she's like got Star Wars T-shirts, and she's I won't say she's as excited as me. I don't think anyone in the world is as excited as me for Episode 7, but she's also looking forward to Episode 7. I've gotten her into Star Trek. Our theater near us, before we had a kid, we used to be able to go to, they used to do fan favorites and cult classics late Friday and Saturday night. And so when they did like Wrath of Khan and stuff, I took her to that and she kind of was obsessed with it. I think she enjoyed the overacting war between Shatner and Montalban.
Montalban
won, gotten her. What's that?
I said Montalban won, by the way.
The overacting department.
I think he did.
That's a tough contest right there.
Shatner has a larger body of work. But in that movie, I'd have to agree.
Yeah, but Montalban has the larger fake chest. So I think that's the...
It's not a fake chest. It's real.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
No. It's, sorry, Jarman.
That's not been proven anywhere. It's a theory and it's an urban legend, but that says his real chest. I'm gonna believe it.
No man's chest is that shiny.
You've seen it? You've seen what?
I've seen it in the movie, and there's no way that's real.
I've seen the movie too, and it's real. He's in fantastic shape. Anyways.
Jarman, next thing you're gonna tell me Bigfoot is real. I mean, come on.
Bigfoot could be real, Steve. You don't know that.
All hell got...
Maybe Bigfoot is Ricardo Montalban. He's not actually dead. He's just roaming the Pacific Northwest.
Or the ghost of Ricardo Montalban is going to come get you.
Now, that would be an M. Night Shyamalan-level twist. right there.
Look at my chest. It is perfectly real. I tell you this now that I'm
and
dead.
And perfectly
okay,
shiny.
What were we
I don't know.
About? Oh, women in geekdom. Well, oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm dating a nerd, and she's arguably more nerdy than I am, and I met her that way. I mean, and there's just so many women like that, and then they're like you said, they're afraid to come out because he's stupid. I love the term knuckle draggers that you use. I want to use that more in my daily vocabulary, but that's absolutely correct. Yeah. So I'm hoping to do more features on that in the future on this show as well, just to kind of bring awareness to the whole Will Wheaton thing. Don't be a dick.
Yeah. It's pretty
that's
simple,
how it comes
really.
Down to.
Yeah.
So I would just like to forewarn our guests that I made put together this list before I realized you were more of a Marvel guy.
Ah, okay.
So there's a good deal of DC characters, but who knows? But they are all very rare and obscure characters, so I'm excited.
I might have to turn in my expert status card.
I mean, you already got a point for taking one of them off the list.
exactly.
Already have 1 point, so you're good.
All right,
are you ready to play Name That Power?
As I'll ever be.
All right.
Let's do it.
Ambush Bug.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I know who he is, but that's literally as far as it goes.
Okay.
What would you be your best
yeah, you
guess
can
his
guess.
Power would be?
I'll give you points for guessing.
Oh.
It's like Balderdash.
If it sounds good, I'll give you a point.
Ambush's bug powers are jumping. I have no idea.
No, he releases.
Wait, I'm gonna guess two. I'm gonna guess two. All right, I'm gonna guess he can kind of like Juggernaut. He just keeps running until he can't.
Absolutely
stop.
Not. He releases tiny bug robots, and then he can teleport to those tiny bug robots.
That is so strange.
All right, number two.
Okay.
Mind warp.
Mind warp.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even think of who the character is.
I think the first five are like DC characters. DC characters.
Okay.
The last five are Marvel. So.
Mind warp has got to be some sort of mental projection, hallucination, maybe telekinesis.
I'll give you a point for that. He creates an astral version of himself. Then he can then use his to do his bidding. So I'll give you a point.
Okay.
You basically said that, so I'll give it to you. Point.
You forgot to give the amateur a try, Steve.
Well, he got it right, so that's whatever. What do you want?
Right-ish.
He got it right-ish.
Right-ish.
all right. Rainbow Rider.
Oh, God.
Okay, I've heard of this one at least, and...
The Rainbow Rider. I don't know.
All I can think of now is Mario Kart.
Yeah, legit.
Yeah, Rainbow Road.
Rainbow Rider. He's got to project rainbows and ride on them. I mean, it's got to be that simple.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, he farts rainbows and he rides them. That'd be awesome.
That's correct. He actually is colorblind, and was ridiculed as a child for making ugly art, and so his dad invented him these glasses that allow him to make solid rainbows and ride on them. And he's an art thief. That's his big thing.
Oh, he's a
villain. Yeah, he's
okay.
A villain.
I don't see rainbows being portrayed in an evil light.
Rainbow Bright was sinister, yo. All right.
What is happening right now?
I don't know. All right, number four, Slipstream.
I've heard of that one.
I don't know that I have.
I think we're getting into Marvel after this.
He's got to be a teleporter. I'm going with teleporter.
Jarman?
Yeah, that'd be my guess too. Like, kind of, he makes his own wormholes and like slips through.
No, he has a cybernetic suit that lets him run at near speedster speeds. They were very clear that he is not a speedster; it is a near speedster.
Yeah. All right then.
All right.
Oh, no points.
I'm
there.
Not doing really well.
Boom slang.
say that again.
Boom slang.
Boom slang.
Yeah.
Are horrible names.
I picked some
Boom.
Good ones.
Oh, wow. Is that what these are? Wow.
German, I want to hear your guess first.
This is like from Assistant Editor's Month or something. This is ridiculousness.
So my guess for Boom Slang is, I don't know why I'm picturing this, but like bombs that boomerang back to him.
I was just going
to
say a bazooka that boomerangs. That's what I was going to say.
Well, you guys have the right idea. Boomslang, so this is literally the description on Wikipedia. Throws snake-shaped boomerangs.
Why?
So it's like New Zealand?
Yes. And then boomerang fish. I throw the fish away and they come back to me.
Is that your New Zealand accent?
No, that's New Zealand, you lub.
Yeah, Muppets. Come on, Jeremy.
Oh,
boomerang fish throw. I don't know that Get character. With it, yo.
Good job, you two, though. You know your Muppet shit.
All right. I think we are now into the Marvel.
I got to reestablish some cred somehow.
Yep. I think we are now into Marvel, I think.
Okay. Now it's even more embarrassing when I don't know him.
Lifter? Yes.
He lifts heavy things.
He's friends with Bender.
Is he? He's not part of the Wrecking Crew, I don't think, anyway.
Sounds like somebody would be part of a Wrecking Crew, not necessarily the Wrecking Crew.
He's either like, I'm going to say he's either, well, he can become a giant. Let's go with that.
Okay, I'll give you a half point because you said it and then backed away from it. He can lift heavy objects. Okay. The reason I found this hero specifically interesting is that he doesn't do it because he has super strength. He can do it because he cancels the gravity of the object.
Interesting.
And I found that interesting. Okay. Just a weak normal guy, but
seems like he could do a lot more with that than just lift things.
Yeah, true.
Like, I don't think he's utilizing his powers to their fullest.
All right, probably not. Slab.
Slab?
Yep, slab.
I'm going to go with impenetrable skin, but I don't know what Ryan's guess is going to be.
Yeah, I'm thinking like the thing, except like, I don't know, concrete or something.
he can grow and shrink at will. This may mean something to you. He was a member of Mr. Sinister's Nasty Boys. A short-lived villain team, apparently.
Yeah, X-Men stuff, but...
No, that's his private entertainment at his house.
The Nasty Boys.
The Nasty Boys. Come on,
that's
over.
That's how Mr. Sinister spends his Friday nights.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right. Morlun.
Oh, he's basically like a vampire. He takes the life force of heroes, specifically spider-powered heroes.
Yeah, I was hoping you would get that after you were talking about Spider-Man. Yeah, he feasts.
Yes, and he's coming back in a big way here pretty soon with the next big Spider-Man event.
Yeah, and I heard he also did a stint on Black Panther. No, nothing? There you go. All right, cool.
He probably did, but that doesn't ring a bell.
I read
me.
The Wikipedias. All right. Anthem.
I'm going to go with sings really loud and hurts people's ears, or can blow things up with his sound waves. About you, Ryan.
Yeah, sound powers would be a good guess. I don't know.
Are you going to throw in your dice with German? Or?
I'll go with he was like a Captain America wannabe.
So both of them, very good guesses. Unfortunately, neither of them correct. He has thunderstorm powers. He can separate positive and negative charges in the air to generate electricity.
So he's a wannabe Storm, not a wannabe Captain America.
I think we need much more literal names characters here.
Well, the last one is very literal. So, all right, this is the last one. Termite.
He eats wood.
That's not an innuendo. He just eats actual wood from trees.
You mean
Sorry,
it that
not,
way.
Not
wow.
a kid show. Not a kid show. Yeah, he might do that too over Mr. Sinister's house late at night.
Yep, along with Slab.
All right, so is that your guess is that you that he eats wood?
I guess I got nothing for you, man. You're embarrassing me.
He can dissolve any substance with his touch.
That makes much more sense. Yeah.
That's much
well,
better than
I'm sorry. Wood. I apparently went too obscure.
That's what we wanted.
That's fine. Don't apologize. I'm just ashamed of myself. I'm gonna go curl up with my Marvel encyclopedia now.
So out of 10, you got 3.5 points. So,
hey. I can't believe I got that many.
Don't worry, right. German has done worse on quizzes. So
I have. Especially if it was name that power, I usually did pretty poorly.
Well, I would have killed on the Muppet song one from that episode, just so you know. So
the Muppets one?
The Muppet song one, I would have killed on that one. I just want everybody to know that. I might have embarrassed myself here today, but The Muppets song.
What about Dead Hands? Have you heard of that game we played way early on? I don't know if you've heard of
it. Until Jarman told me to stop.
Dead Hands. That doesn't ring a bell.
So Dead Hands is a Muppet-based game where I name a Muppet character, and you have to tell me if their original puppeteer is alive or not.
Ah, okay.
It's horrible. I was like, Steve, that's really depressing. I don't think we should play that anymore.
No, I was like,
it's kind of depressing.
Yeah, but it's awesome. Especially now that it's getting harder because so many of them are dead.
That would make it easier.
Yeah, they're all dead. The answer is always
that's
C.
True.
Well, we want to thank you, Ryan, for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun, and you definitely educated us a little bit about some the basics of comics, so we can kind of hopefully grow our knowledge from here.
Happy to help. I got schooled as well, so it's
go study up on obscure characters.
Yeah, apparently I need to.
But before we let you go, you also have other pretty nerdy passions, like you're really into Disney, right?
I am very much a Disney-phile, yes.
I heard the term Diz-nerds before being used.
I've not heard that term, actually.
So apparently
it was the first one I had heard, but, when you told me.
Do you live near a Disney?
I don't, Ryan? Unfortunately. I live in Michigan, so I am about as far away from either one as I could be, almost.
Yeah, that's like the opposite of Disney.
It really is. Yes. We have a theme park or amusement park that has a few roller coasters, but it is no Disney. Like anybody else, you know, I grew up watching Disney movies, and back when Disney was a premium channel, my grandmother had it, and I was obsessed with it, especially the stuff that like featured the parks and all that kind of stuff. And then in college, it went full bore when I did a 6-month internship at Walt Disney World, and haven't looked back since. So last time I was at a park, though, unfortunately, was 2010, so I need to get back to a park.
I was saying we probably save that for our Disney episode. We'll have you on, because we have a couple crazy Disney fans here in Orlando, where I live, obviously.
Obviously, yeah.
And so we can have, like, a group Disney powwow.
Sounds episode. Awesome.
That'll be fun.
Yep, sign
That'll
me
be
up.
Great. Especially based on the theme parks, especially.
Yes.
All right, well, I guess that'll wrap it up for this segment. Thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you pretty soon.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for joining us.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. So once again, Internet, thanks for joining us. You can find us on all the major social networks. We got the Facebooks, the Twitters, the Google Plus, which I have never logged on to.
I've been on a couple times. Google Plus is really pretty. It's a very pretty social media site, but no one's on it. It's like a ghost line.
You can email us anything at playonnerds.com. Love, hate, anything in between. Send us an email.
Yeah, and please post on our Facebook or talk to us on Twitter, because we want to start a dialogue with you and talk about what you want to talk about on the podcast. So just let us know.
So join us again next week. We'll be bringing you another great nerdy episode. And until then, have a good night, Internet.
Stay nerdy, my friends.